This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Human trafficking continues to be an issue across the U.S., even here in western Wisconsin. On today's show, we'll feature a conversation from officials in Eau Claire who are working to raise awareness about this issue. But first, we'll hear from a leader in the La Crosse area who's been working to address human trafficking in the Coulee region. The Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration formed the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery 6 years ago. Joining us now for an update on the group's progress is Sister Marlene Weisenbeck. So, Sister Marlene, I wonder if you could start by talking about, you know, why the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, you know, wanted to work on this issue in the first place.
Well, we wanted to work on it because we are called to it. And that happened because I was invited by the White House in 2012 to work on the President's Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships Advisory Council. And we were asked to study the topic of human trafficking and modern slavery. So naturally, I brought the experience from that advisory council back home to La Crosse, and it was part of me by then. And as we were exploring options for ministry focus in 2013, I said, does anybody want to talk about human trafficking? And there was a very wonderful response to it. It came about that way. And also later in that year, June Chomey, the par excellence social justice person here in La Crosse, held the first conference on human trafficking at UWL. We shared information, we shared lists of people who were interested in it, and that's how we got started. There were different groups of people coming together, obviously nationally and locally, that had an interest in this, and that's why I say it was a call. When the world calls you, when people call you, they want to work at it, it's very easy then to begin a process of focusing the mission of your organization and exploring ways in which that can be done most appropriately in your own local area.
So it's been about a year since we checked in with you about the, you know, the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery. And so I wonder if you could share what the group has been working on.
Sure. As you know, and as you mentioned in your introductory remarks, the task forces around the state, Eau Claire and other places, have a big focus on raising awareness and on education. That's our mission, too. So we look for all kinds of ways that we can implement raising awareness among people and in the public. So in the last year, for example, some of the things we have done, besides giving presentations to maybe three dozen different organizations, both faith-based and community-based, some of the other efforts that we have we had an ad campaign on the La Crosse City buses for about 6 weeks. Another project was a video series in collaboration with Breaking Free in the Twin Cities. The series is called The Faces of Human Trafficking, in which survivors, a pimp and a John, were interviewed about how they got into that life and the impact that it had on their lives. So that was another rather major project. We also partnered with the UWL Social Justice Institute and provided a speaker for their institute in April, I believe, of 2018. And then, you know, I like to say, how do things really focus in a given year? We all like acronyms. And so an acronym that's coming prominent this year for us is EAP. And for me, that means empowerment. That means helping others find the means that they need to to implement something within their own organizations. So I spend a fair amount of time consulting with others, sometimes individuals, students, or healthcare residents who are writing papers and doing research. Right now, Viterbo University is getting ready for their performance of Hansel and Gretel, and they want to put a human trafficking aspect on it. It's going to look different than the way that we normally think of the opera Hansel and Gretel because of that emphasis. I've been working with the District Rotary and helping them get their program ready for next June, suggesting speakers, et cetera. And we also help some survivors who make their needs known to us. So I put all of that under empowerment. Under A, I call that advocacy. In August, our task force, in collaboration with the Women's Fund here in La Crosse, sponsored a roundtable conversation in which we talked about the need for advocacy training so that when survivors come forward, they have someone who actually is knowledgeable and experienced about how to relate to them and the special needs of survivors of human trafficking. And what came out of that is still in process, I believe. We're working with the healthcare institutions here in La Crosse in trying to establish 24-hour coverage with advocates that have been trained for that very purpose. And it's coming along quite nicely. A number of people attended that training, and so that has been a big improvement, I think, in the healthcare institutions. And then lastly, P, I say prayer. That is for prayer. This year, just last week, in fact, we sponsored, in collaboration with the Interfaith Leaders Coalition here in La Crosse, an interfaith prayer for International Day of Prayer and Awareness on Human Trafficking. That was held at English Lutheran Church. And those leading the service were from four primary faith traditions: the Christian tradition, the Muslim tradition, the Jewish tradition, and the Baha'i tradition. So those are some of the things that we've been working on in the past year. Do we sit down and make a strategic plan? I have to confess that we don't. But I find that in conversations and in interactions with other people, these needs and ideas come forth, and then we respond to what people are interested in doing, in what they perceive to be their own needs within their own organizations and faith-based traditions, and then we try to respond and work together. So I would say more and more, although we've been in existence for about 6 years, more and more we're finding that networking and collaboration and partnering is certainly the key to getting anything done in a community. I see more of that happening here in the La Crosse area, and it pleases me very much.
What do you see as next steps for this group?
I think that we will continue to be active in the ways that we have been in the past. Staying with our mission of raising awareness and helping organizations themselves find ways to bring this to prominence within their own organizations in terms of training and projects that they are interested in themselves, so that the conversation is widened ever as much as we can make it be widened. I think, you know, we can talk to people, and we're happy to do that. But unless the conversation becomes alive within an organization and is on everybody's mind, I think that is going to be the way we can be most effective. So we keep our ears to the ground. We keep our hands open so that we can work with others We help others and ourselves to keep open eyes also so that we can see what is before us and what is arising as the greatest needs as each year unfolds.
Sister Marlene Weisenbeck from the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration in La Crosse is here with us today to talk about the recent work of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery and how the group is working to raise awareness about human trafficking. Coming up, we'll hear from officials in the Eau Claire area about how they're working to address this issue. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Raising awareness about human trafficking has become a statewide effort, including in La Crosse and Eau Claire. WPR's Rich Kramer talked this week with Nancy Yarbrough, founder of Milwaukee's Fresh Start Learning Incorporated, Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire, and freshman State Representative Jody Emerson, a Democrat from Eau Claire, about what the public can do to help fight human trafficking.
So to start off, I wanted to get some personal background on the three guests joining us today. Nancy Yarbrough, I'll start with you. What is your personal connection to the work that you're doing right now to address sex trafficking?
Well, my personal experience is because at a young age, I was also lured into the grips of human trafficking by a person that I really thought had interest for me, an older guy that made it very appealing for me to get involved with sex trafficking. At that point, of course, we didn't call it that. It was a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship and making money and making ends meet as we could. I'm fully vested in this because now my son calls me the modern day Harriet Tubman. So I'm the person that goes back out to the streets where I used to be a victim. And now I'm a survivor, thriver, helping those to be able to come out and educate those that don't know the warning signs and what to watch for.
And how has your organization, you know, found its particular mission and in addressing and working to end sex trafficking? I mean, it's broader than that, but with regards to this issue particularly.
Well, we make sure that we are looking at all aspects because, again, it's not cookie cutter, just like you just said. It's a different parallels that actually happen. So we look at it from the emotional standpoint, the physical abuse, how you get your life back together. So I use myself as a model of what I needed, what happened with me, where were some of the gaps at, some of the service gaps were. And a lot of it was mainly being able to have a listening ear to understand and not put your objectives there where you don't understand. Listen and listen to the person that's actually telling you what happened. This was the lure. This was the pull. So we have legal counseling. We have health care initiatives. We have job readiness and placement, housing, all the things that's needed once you get to that point. But initially, we start off with just support groups and outreach on feet on the street, meeting people where they are.
Thank you for that. Jody Emerson, I want to go to you now. So, you know, what's your personal connection to this work? What drew you to it, and why are you such a strong advocate for trying to raise awareness?
Yeah, I think what drew me to the field of human trafficking or fighting human trafficking was just knowing that it was happening in my community and that no one was talking about it. You know, we've seen in the Eau Claire area how much the talk of homelessness and affordable housing has increased in recent months and years. But to think that the fastest growing crime was happening on a regular basis in my community to children, to young adults, and no one was talking about it just really broke my heart, because when someone falls a victim to human trafficking, it really can put them on a path that can be just so devastating for years to come. And so no personal connection for me, No one in my family or close network had fallen victim to it. But I saw how quickly someone could fall victim to it. And so I thought, gosh, this could be my girls that this happened to. This could have been me that this happened to when I was younger. And we need to support our community. And so that was really what lit the fire under me with it.
And how much of that fire played into your interest in becoming a state lawmaker? I mean, are the two tied?
A little bit. I would say when I was with the advocacy group, I was pretty active in working on state policies and on legislation. Mm-hmm. That was a piece of the job that I did back then, and saw how having really good public policy can change the path of our communities and our state. And so I thought, you know, there's a lot of other things that I'm interested in, too. So I really wanted to help other avenues as well. So I would say it was more about what I learned when I was at the advocacy group that really spurred my wanting to run for office. And I always said on the campaign trail that, you know, human trafficking legislation wasn't going to be a big part of what I wanted to tackle when mm-hmm. I got to Madison. However, our session starts in January, which is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so there's been a lot of legislation that's been proposed and talked about in the Capitol regarding human trafficking and a lot of different speaking engagements and things like that. So even though I said I wasn't going to do a lot with human trafficking, there still is a lot of work to do. And that has been a lot of what I've been tackling as we've gotten started this session.
Kat Jacoby, how about yourself? I mean, what brought you to Fierce Freedom? We know you at WPR in Eau Claire as a former intern.
Right, I was an intern here.
Yeah, so yep. So tell us about the path that brought you to Fierce Freedom.
Yeah, so for me, it was it all kind of started in college because I went to the University of Eau Claire here, and I think it was probably my junior year. I was able to see a campus film, Nefarious, which was all about human trafficking, kind of on a global, international scale. And as Nancy and Jody both said, it was like almost like a fire was lit in me. Just this desire, this seeing of injustice and knowing that it was going on and wondering how I could join that fight. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of planted there a couple years back. And then I was looking into getting into nonprofits, and I didn't really know how that would be possible. I spent a year working on the East Coast, and then I came back kind of working in my field because my background is public relations. Mm-hmm. But I came back and I wanted to do something kind of meaningful, something that I was really proud to do. And I started volunteering for Fierce Freedom, actually. And it was really cool because I was actually able to see Jody at the Women's March speaking and really in her element. And that actually was really inspiring to me to see. And then after volunteering, I was able to come on full time. So it's really exciting.
So far, has it been rewarding work?
Very rewarding work. Yeah, very. As I'm sure that these two can attest, sometimes it is very, it can be emotionally draining, but you really have to take self-care seriously. But nothing has been more rewarding that I've done. So
we're joined by Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom, Jody Emerson, a state representative for the 91st Assembly District, and Nancy Yarbrough, founder and executive director of Fresh Start Learning. I want to talk about, you know, a little bit about vocabulary and about definitions. So how do we even define human trafficking? Kat Jacoby, I'll start with you.
So human trafficking, as you kind of had mentioned earlier, is any time that force, fraud, or coercion is used for the purposes of subjection to commercial sex, or anyone under the age of 18 that is being exploited for like basically, as you said, modern day slavery. Mm-hmm. So you have to look for those elements, and anytime that is present, that is when human trafficking is going on. And as far as terminology, that's something that is really important that we want to. We always want to shift perceptions because I think that there's just this kind of idea that someone is just, you know, just a prostitute or something.
Right.
And so we always want to specify that actually when they're being trafficked, they are a victim. They're not making that choice. And if they're under the age of 18 legally, they are always being trafficked. And so the word child prostitute isn't even really in our vocabulary. We always say prostituted child or trafficked teen or trafficked youth or something like that. So
Nancy Yarbrough, what have you found as far as, you know, misconceptions, whether it be through vocabulary or just about the whole issue, about human trafficking and about what happens to victims? what are some of the common misconceptions or myths that are out there?
Well, one of them you already brought up about it was their choice, or they made the choice to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I work with youth every Monday and every Thursday at two organizations that have young ladies there between the ages of 12 and 17 that the court systems have deemed trafficked because they did have an overseer or somebody that was actually engaging them in the act of something of value. Sometimes we think it's always money, but it's just a place to stay. Sometimes it's food. Sometimes it's the love of the person they want to be around. The money part is the last element that some of the young ladies or the young men even think about, is being involved with a crowd that accepts you for who you are. So sometimes it's misconceived as a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship when that person on the other end believes that that love in exchange for their time or in exchange for their heart, exchange for anything of value to them, meaning I just want to spend time with you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't get the fact that it's not as easy to say no to that situation that it is to say yes to, especially if you have very much unresolved trauma, which seems to be the catalyst for most of the young ladies that I work with. Is always something that was unresolved in their childhood that led them to be able to say yes when they should have said no. The no is not always easy.
Right. Well, I think all of us know that in certain situations it's hard to say no, but with all those other, you know, circumstances that might be in a person's life, I can only imagine what complications that would add. Jody Emerson, you know, there's kind of playing off of what Nancy Yarbrough just said as far as the misconceptions about whether or not this is a choice or if it's a money-making venture. You know, I always see people talking about, well, you know, prostitution or selling sex is the oldest, you know, it's the oldest form of employment. It's the one of the oldest jobs on earth. So is,
right.
do you not accept that?
You know, I would say, and I get this question a lot, you know, well, you know, what about sex workers?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that at some point, we as a society have failed someone for the most part, if they're looking at selling their body in order to make money. We haven't given them the education that they deserve, the jobs available to them that they deserve, things like that. If they feel like selling their body is the only option that they've got for making money, for being able to make ends meet in this world today, we as a society have failed them.
Mm.
And a while ago, I did hear somebody say it's not the oldest vocation in the world, it's the oldest exploitation in the world.
Mm.
So, you know, one way or the other, somebody is using somebody. And that's just not acceptable. I think we've moved past that. We're not in the dark ages anymore. We have a world today where men, women, boys, and girls have opportunities, should have opportunities. And so people should be able to be whatever they want to be. And, you know, just to get on my feminist bandwagon for a second, if this was something that people were doing to make money and make a decent amount of money, guys would have done it a long time ago. So there is some exploitation involved in it if most of the sex workers are female. So
that's an interesting point. And so then why is this, you know, why is sex trafficking also referred to, Jody Emerson, as modern day slavery? I mean, it seems pretty self-apparent, but can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's really, it's a bondage. Now, it might not be the physical bonds, and I always cringe at some images. If you did a Google search for human trafficking, you're going to see somebody in you know, ropes or chains or duct tape or something like that. And that's not what it looks like. It's invisible bonds. It's psychological bonds. It's like Nancy was talking about, you know, the love that somebody feels like they're getting. It, you know, it's a very, it's not true love, but it's attention love. And so those are the bonds. Like, if I do this, then this person, if I don't do this, then this person will leave me. My boyfriend will leave me. I've lost my group of friends, things like that. So we really want to make sure that people understand that their personal worth and are reaching towards that. That's an important piece in really preventing human trafficking, whether it's sex or labor trafficking.
Today, we're learning more about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin. What does it look like? What is it like to be trafficked? What are legislators and advocacy groups doing to help local communities spot it and stop it? We're joined by Jody Emerson, State Representative for the 91st Assembly District, Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire, and Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning in Milwaukee. I'm Rich Kramer. Kat Jacoby, I'm going to go to you. Sex trafficking is often described as hidden in plain sight. So let's talk about hidden in plain sight in Western Wisconsin, because it seems like, you know, to the uneducated person, it might seem like that is a big city problem.
Right.
A Milwaukee problem, a Chicago problem. Mm-hmm. Is that not the case?
Definitely not the case. Human trafficking has been reported in all 72 Wisconsin counties. So it's an urban problem. It's a rural problem. It's an everywhere problem. I think it just case by case does look different, you know, wherever you are.
Sure.
So that's something that we really work to do with Fierce Freedom. We go into all sorts of, we go around the state and educate. And so we'll go to, you know, smaller places like Cornell, Wisconsin, or even, you know, larger places like Milwaukee, or because it does happen. It just looks different. So we've actually worked with, so last year we kind of expanded our programming to include victim support. And we had the opportunity, you know, victims just kind of came forward. Either they were connected with us through someone they were related to or someone they knew, or they kind of connected with us. And we actually worked with 27 victims in, you know, the span of basically 2018. And these victims, you know, came from all over the state. So they came from, as I said, like Cornell, which is a really small, you know, I was like driving through there and I was like, I can't believe how little this is. But it does happen there because as we've kind of talked about, it doesn't have to just be the exchange of money. It can be the exchange of drugs. It can be, it can just be, you know, a relationship that you, where you believe that you're being loved or they're giving you that love and acceptance that you crave. But it's really that you're really being trafficked. So it can really happen in so many different kind of situations.
That is surprising. Nancy Yarbrough, I want to ask you. I mean, I've heard references to Milwaukee being some sort of a pimp college or some kind of a training ground for people that are looking to get into trafficking people in Western, in Wisconsin and across the nation. How true is that? I mean, is it that big of an issue in Milwaukee?
Well, it is. We used to have this thing called the Players Ball that was here in Milwaukee. So it was kind of like a pimp culture, especially down the Wisconsin Avenue area. There was a whole different dynamic of it. It seemed flashy, like the movies used to show with Superfly and all the guys that actually showed up with the red suits and the pimp hats and that kind of thing, which was a reality to some people. You wanted to be part of that famous type of, I'm with this person, I'm with this guy. So the guys that were the so-called pimps in the day had a reputation about themselves that they took care of their women, you know, very well. And just to kind of piggyback off of hidden in plain sight, the reason why in Milwaukee it is so hidden because you have so many pockets of poverty. And in a poverty state of mind, it seems normal. So what you're talking about trafficking, I call it under your feet. So you step on what people are saying because you know you have to provide for your children. You have to provide for yourself, your drug addiction. And then it's over people's head that's living in an affluent neighborhood because they figure that it could never happen to me. It could never happen to my children. And then we have pockets of faith-based organizations that believe because I'm raising my child right and they don't need anything, there could be not be a possible way that they can be lured in. So Milwaukee has all those hidden pockets of people that are either is beneath my feet because I have to do this to survive, it's over my head because I have everything and my children want for nothing, or it's hidden in those faith-based communities where you don't want to address those situations because you believe that could possibly happen. So it is hidden in plain sight in so many different areas and for so many different reasons.
Jody Emerson, why do you find that it's difficult for some people to talk about it? I mean, that's part of the hidden in plain sight, that people don't want to believe it's happening in their area. Why do we have that reaction?
Well, I think it's just easier for people to think, well, it's those people over there. Because if it's those people and whoever those people are, you know, it could be, well, it doesn't happen in smaller communities like I live in. It doesn't happen in Milwaukee. It only happens on the coast. Or, you know, I mean, everybody can point to some other area where they think it's going to happen. Because if we really examined what's going on, we'd have to admit that it's happening in our communities and under our watch. And Human trafficking crosses so many different levels. It happens to young and old, and men and women, and poor and affluent, and those who are employed, and those who don't have any chemical addiction issues, those who do have chemical addiction issues. Traffickers are master manipulators, and everybody has some hole in their lives that needs to be filled. And those traffickers will figure out what that hole is, and they will work to manipulate someone to get them to fall victim to their schemes and so-called dreams. But everybody has a way that we could be manipulated, whether it's a 14-year-old who is on Facebook and just had a fight with their parents and says, oh, my God, my parents are driving me crazy. I'd do anything to get out of my house. Or whether maybe it's a single mom who's 26 years old and is worried about making ends meet and keeping a roof over her children's heads. Now, those two situations, how they would be exploited, are going to look very different. But a trafficker will figure out how to manipulate both of those situations to get what he or she wants.
And, trauma was brought up. So in your experience in working with victims and through your advocacy work and all that you've learned, is that true that a lot of people tend to have some kind of a trauma, either physical or sexual abuse in their past?
I think that is the case, that something happened that makes somebody vulnerable to this. And that's why on the state level, we're really working on getting trauma-informed care in trainings into the schools, into the hospitals, into the jails and correction centers. You think about how many places people connect with other people. There's so many opportunities for someone to intervene, whether it's when somebody is in that grooming process or once they've fallen victim. And, but this isn't just a police issue. We can't arrest our way out of it. We need all hands on deck. We need everybody looking at it. And it was interesting, some of the discussions that have come up in Madison for me. I was talking to the secretary of the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, and he was saying, what can we do about this? Knowing that I've had some work in working with hotels to spot human trafficking, he's like, is there anything we can do on a programming, on a licensing level that's going to help with this? And so I think a lot of people down here are looking at what can I do in my sphere of influence to reach out to people, whether it's Department of Children and Families, whether it's Department of Public Instruction, whether it's the Secretary of Agriculture, saying, how can we fight human trafficking? And that change has been so refreshing and so wonderful. We've even got a bill right now, SB 25, that is looking at training truck drivers, people who hold commercial driver's licenses, as they are getting their training, that they need to have some amount of curriculum. And it doesn't have to be a whole lot. It can just be a small amount to understand what human trafficking is. Because if anybody who holds a commercial driver's license knows what human trafficking looks like, we're talking bus drivers, we're talking over-the-road truck drivers, we're talking UPS drivers, any of these people, that's a lot of eyes and ears that are out in our communities and across the country who could be spotting victims of human trafficking.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the issue of human trafficking in western Wisconsin. We're here with Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning Incorporated in Milwaukee, Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire, and State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. WPR's Rich Kramer is the moderator.
Nancy Yarbrough, quoted in a story that was put together by WPR reporter Danielle Kading, and this had to do with branding, and I thought that was horrifying. I did not know that this was a thing, but also it was really interesting in that tattoo shop workers and owners are getting some training on how to help spot this as well. So there's another layer of eyes on the ground. Can you talk to us a little bit about branding? I mean, what is it?
Well, you know what? It comes in different shapes and forms. It depends on how the young lady or the young man got pulled in or lured into sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. If it was gang related, then it would be like the gang sign that they actually use to identify that they belong to this particular gang. And then you have what's called the jump in, you know, so the girls have to be able to produce the money that's needed to be a part of that family. So they always have this family connection. Then the boyfriend, girlfriend situation is get my name tatted on you so that people can know that you belong to me. So they have that. Then they have the high price dollar signs and the Louis Vuitton signs on them to say they're high price, high price prostitutes. It just depends on the nature of the community which they've got pulled into, what the tattoos are going to look like. I've never really seen the barcode where people use that all the time. Mm-hmm. It's more so in the nape of their back when they're dancing for in exchange for sexual exploitation of showing themselves there. It's in the massage parlors. It's in different places where sexual exploitation happened, but that branding is so unique to I own you property type. And we were told back in when I was out on the street that it was considered like a cattle, you know, how you knew the person who owned that particular cattle because all the branding was the same. And that's the same mindset that's involved in branding the young ladies. It's a sign of endearment for those that believe it's their boyfriend that's actually saying that now I honor you by putting my name, your name on my neck. Or I honor you by, you know, allowing people to know that I'm a part of this gang, you know, and they have my protection because they can see visibly that who I belong to. So people on the street that live the life understands the codes of the tattoos. People that don't see or understand, it just seems like, again, another part of hidden in plain sight. It wouldn't draw attention to anyone because everybody now is getting tattoos for various reasons. Mm-hmm. But those that are in the life recognize the tattoos for sure.
That is incredible. And so tell us a little bit about the work that's being done to try to educate people at tattoo parlors.
Well, what we're saying is that just to watch for if a person actually comes in, a young lady comes in, she looks underage, but she's with either a group of females and they're all getting the same tattoo. And the guy is actually telling the person that's initiating the tattoo what needs to happen. This girl has no ability to speak. She has no conversation. She looks there with no voice. Her eyes are toward the ground and she doesn't speak at all. Mm. You know, a lot of times that's what ends up happening. He goes in and he makes all the references of what it should be like. The girl goes in and she keeps her mouth closed and she just sits there and get it done. But now that they have tattoo artists and things like that that are doing it inside the home and know exactly how it's related, the more that we put information out, the more crafty that the trafficker gets, you know. So as long as we can let people know what to watch for, if it doesn't seem right, well, what does this constitute? What kind of sign is this? It's nothing on the board that you already have. It's something they brought in themselves, but you notice that it's on him too. You know, the tattoo is branded on him as well. You know, those kind of things. So the warning signs are there, the red flags are there, but if you're doing the things business as usual, it won't even seem unusual to see that happening. But that's what happens. They bring them in, they can't talk, they don't say anything, and that guy or that girl that's with them, because sometimes they don't even come, they send what's called the bottom girl with that person, so it doesn't have a red flag. She has it. I'm just gonna get my girlfriend a tattoo like I have, you know. So they're doing the most talking and they're not being alarmed because these are two girlfriends that looks like they're getting tattoos to endear one another. But it's again, and girls are traffickers too, so we can't elude from that as well. There are female traffickers as well. So it's again, it's all hidden in plain sight, but the more that we educate, like it was alluded to before, having more eyes and more ears that are educated and can see things and can hear things and hear that conversation and then be able to be alerted by it, never become a superhero, always take down license plates and things of that nature and just kind of follow up with your local authorities saying, hey, this didn't seem right. I had a group of people come in and they got these tattoos and this was, you know, what I believe. And when we do that, let the people that are in place do the hard work, but we need to do the groundwork.
Can I just jump in and follow up with what Nancy said? I mean, absolutely. If you see something that you're worried about, safety first. You know, you don't want to be, like Nancy said, that superhero. And so when you do take a license plate or an address down or something like that, contacting your local law enforcement and saying, something just felt off about this situation, can you do a welfare check on this house? Because if you call up some 911 and say, there's a ring of human trafficking happening next to me, not all dispatch centers are trained in what that looks like. And so just saying, hey, can you do a welfare check on these people? Something didn't seem right, is a big key that gets police out there in a non-combative way.
Kat Jacoby, you'd like to jump in too.
Yeah, just I totally agree with what was just said. And as Nancy mentioned too, just I think it's so good to talk about the level of coercion that's just going on with these victims. The fact that the family model is used. A lot of these victims are looking for that family. They're looking for that acceptance, and that is manipulated to the, you know, up to like the degree that it is used. And basically they'll use that manipulation of like, oh, you're in our family. And then they'll all get, you know, if like with the tattoo thing, that's what they're looking for is that acceptance. And then they'll, you know, a prostitute or a victim, as we say, a victim that does not have a pimp is actually called a renegade. So it's sort of this negative like connotation and terminology that's used. It's just like, oh, they don't have anybody. They don't have a family. They're just renegade. They're going rogue, you know. So and they're almost like avoided or not treated as well within that sphere. So I just think that's also important. And also to just touch on a couple other warning signs that we like to talk about when we educate is even like, as they said, things that do not match. So maybe somebody that maybe a victim that comes into a hotel or something and she is not dressed appropriately for the weather. So let's say it's as cold as it is right now. And she is going to be wearing she's very scantily clad, not wearing a lot of clothing. But maybe her hair looks really freshly done. Her nails look really freshly done. A lot of times, too, victims that have been coerced into this life will be drugs will be used to kind of control them. So sometimes it's even their teeth are not going to be looking really great too, like because of maybe meth use or something like that. So I think that there's things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think to look for. But as was mentioned, I think go with your gut and be persistent. I think that in the Midwest, especially, we're very like, oh, I don't want to, you know, step on anyone's toes or something. But you could potentially be saving somebody from this life.
And I understand that. But do you find that people are kind of playing off what you just said, nervous about, or do you think there is a danger of profiling? I mean, if you see someone that you think looks like this idea of someone that's being trafficked, I mean, couldn't, you know, is there a danger that you could be wrong?
Well, we never want to, we never want to fearmonger or make the, you know, escalate the situation anyway.
Sure.
As Jody said, I think it's really important that you educate yourself and know really what it looks for, what it looks like. But as we say, you know, like call the non-emergency police number, call the human trafficking hotline, kind of just make the call and just see, you know, like, because I feel like there's a lot more to be risked if you didn't make the call, to be honest.
Sense.
That's what I would say. But
Kat Jacoby, I wanted to kind of touch on, you know, one of the things that's come up a few times is drugs and how they play into this. So where do they fit into the picture?
A lot of the victims that we've worked with actually have come from the jail as well, like Chippewa County Jail. And I don't know if all of them have, but many of them were there for drug-related charges.
Sure.
I believe that it's that vulnerability. So whether they already were, you know, addicted to drugs or opiates or narcotics or anything, and then somebody came along to traffic them and use them and exploit them, or whether they entered into a relationship and then drugs were used to control them. It can look lots of different ways. I know in Madison there was a sentencing of a trafficker who received, I believe it was 20 years or something. He was trafficking two women that were known to have to be heroin addicts. So he actually approached them because he knew that he could easily control them by using drugs.
Sure.
So that's a huge part of it. And so, again, it's looking beneath the surface. Like the victims we've worked with, one of them even said, she said, my family just thinks I'm a drug addict. She's like, but all this happened to me. You know, like I was also trafficked. Another victim we worked with from the jail, she was basically, she was actually initiated into a gang and she was actually used as sexual collateral in exchange for drugs. Like if they couldn't get the money for drugs, she would just stay and be used.
Wow.
Yep.
Jody Emerson, so, you know, we've done shows on in the past about
you know, I-94 is a major corridor, you know, for drugs coming between the Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago, etc. Does it also play a pretty large role in human trafficking? I mean, we did a show, I think you were on years ago, and we were talking then about Backpage, which is a website that traffickers used. I believe that's been shut down. But
it has, yep.
But so is how big of a role does the interstate play here?
Well, and I think the fact that we call it human trafficking, people assume that you need to be moved around from place to place.
Sure.
And some people do have that happen. But we've also known about people who've been trafficked from their living room to their basement.
Wow.
Sometimes people don't ever move physically anywhere. You know, if you've got the internet in your town, it's very likely you've got human trafficking. That is the highway that we're using more often than not. But when we're on the interstate, it is a little bit more easy to get from place to place. But, you know, that just opens up the question, you know, we don't do away with the highway, though,
right,
because trafficking happens on there. And so as we're looking at how do we reach out to vulnerable people, how do we train our youth to know what's happening, you know, we're not going to just do away with the internet for them. We're not going to do away with cell phones. We just need to teach them how to use them safely. And so we can't make the tools that the traffickers use go away. We can teach people how to use those tools safely so they don't fall victim to it.
Nancy Yarbrough.
Never, ever, whatever you do, don't not follow your gut feeling, parents, when you have that friend that all of a sudden comes around and you feel that gut feeling about this, something's not right. Follow your instinct, because a lot of the young ladies that we work with, that's exactly how it happened. They had a friend they met at school. This friend was already hooked into the life. They start hanging out and going to parties. They wanted to be popular, and all of a sudden they got in further than they could or wanted to because of the deception of what happened. They couldn't go back and tell their parents because now, you know, they did something they were not supposed to. Parents have a close enough relationship with your child where they feel like they can come to you and tell you anything, even if they disobeyed you,
mm-hmm,
you know, so that doesn't end up happening. Because a lot of that shame and guilt actually happens as well when you're manipulated and pulled in.
American culture, we're obsessed with sex, and, you know, pornography is so prevalent. And are these things that groups like yours, Nancy, would like to try to raise awareness about or try to eliminate?
Well, we have what's called the Next Steps group that we go in and we talk with these young ladies about what's going to happen next in your life after you have been deemed trafficked, and they don't really feel like they are trafficked. They feel like it was a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, so we have to peel back the onion.
Sure.
And we do it on the emotional basis. We teach a class, it's a 10-week course that's evidence-based called Ending the Game. So I'm a trainer for that, and right now I'm actually training the staff and the children that have been involved so they can be on the same level of conversation. If it seems good to the world, well, why would it seem good to you? Ask them, what do you see about that? Having them have the conversation, which always seems to be the biggest thing. My mom never listened to me. My dad doesn't understand. You know, they have feelings. Talk about those feelings. What happened to talking about the sexual desire that happens when you get older? What happened to talking about boyfriend, girlfriend, unhealthy and healthy relationships? What happened to if I got touched inappropriately? Oh, who do I need to tell? And then finding that confidence in that person. What happens when I want to dress in a kind of a way that makes me feel comfortable, but I'm not doing it to make anybody else look at me in a certain way? I like this dress.
Mm-hmm.
We can't tell young ladies or even young men you can't wear something because you're going to be pinpointed as a prostitute. It's if the confidence that you have when you're wearing it, ask yourself why you're doing it. So it always goes back to the why question, mm-hmm, that we always ask in our Next Steps group or any other thing that we're doing evidence-based wise, dealing with those emotions. We have to find out from that person that actually went through it exactly how much of it they understood, and then start giving them tools that they might not have had in their toolkit of growing up, and take out some of the ones that don't need to be there to give them an opportunity for a fresh start, you know. And that's exactly what's been working for us. We've actually had 97 young ladies, but older young ladies that have been in the life from younger come through our facility, and we've only been open since October 4th for our drop-in location, you know. And that shows the fact that people are looking for a way out. They just don't know where to find it at.
Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning Incorporated in Milwaukee Cat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire and State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire spoke this week with WPR's Rich Kramer about human trafficking in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, including our interview with the member of the La Crosse Task Force to End Modern Slavery, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.